So I think I first want to advertise my student. So this is based on his thesis, Sean. He's graduating. He's an absolutely good student, as good as a postdoc you can get. So if you're really looking for somebody. So I think I will talk about unitary 3+1 dimension top partial quantum field theories. The goal is very obvious. So the goal is to basically look for a 3D concept analog of a modular tensor category, which characterize 2+1 TKFTs. Or if you want to talk about trifold weight row, we are talking about spherical fusion category. So that's really the goal. And I think this is too hard for the moment. So I think we are still at the stage of constructing examples just to get some feeling of the subject. And I want to make a remarks here. So basically what I'm going to do is I want to construct new 3+1 TKFTs using something which is kind of strange. It's a two-dimensional thing, promoted. And I want to make one remark. In the literature, there is a concept called spherical two category due to McKee. This is exactly designed to do this, but this concept is not good enough. It's very limited, and it won't cover any example I will talk about, and actually cover not really interesting example. So this is a too limited definition. So we need something better. So a second remark is that if you are a topology like me, actually I'm showing my color today, I'm giving a blackboard talk because I'm a mathematician. And actually my thesis on four-dimension topology. So if you think about four-dimension topology, I believe these are all useless in the following sense. So I would conjecture all such TKFTs are homotopy determined. Another way to say it, if you look at the partition function for four manifolds, they are all homotopy invariants. So there's nothing really exciting for topology, but doesn't mean it's not interesting for physics. I think to be interesting, probably you need plus fermions, and you need to plug symmetry, I think. And the reason is obvious. There's one famous example, which is the only one which is really powerful in topology, is the Donaldson theory. According to Witten, that's a supersymmetric theory, and that actually is supersymmetry protected theory. So that's the lesson. Okay, so that's really what we're going to talk about. So what I'm going to do now is to construct or tell you you know, what these new things are. So first, let me list all the things we know. So the families of 3+1 TKFTs. Okay. The first one we know is the digraph weighting theory, twisted. So here you are given by a group and an omega, which is a four co-cycle. And the second family is given by Kreyeta. So this is called Kreyeta TKFTs. And this, the input is a, let me always make unitary. This is important for me to make this conjecture, actually. Unitary is important. So this input is a unitary braided fusion category. And unitary buy me quite a few things. Unitary buy me the spherical structure, so I don't need to mention the word spherical. And people call this unitary premodular category. I don't like to call it the premodular, make them secondary class. They are not. They're as good as anything else. So that they are unitary braided fusion category. So this is the Kreyeta TKFT. And then there's a Yetta two homotopy type TKFTs. So the input here is a cross module. And as far as I know, in terms of families, I think that's pretty much all of them, I think.
Does the cross module satisfy some finite groups?
Oh, yeah, the two groups are all finite groups.
What do you mean? So where's the cohomology class? The big cohomology class?
What do you mean, cohomology class?
Like, okay, the cross module is an analog of this G, but this would be an analog of the omega, the cohomology class and the class.
I thought the cross module has a third, well, that's yours. So, okay, I should put another slab here. That's Antoine's theory. I think there's a cohomology class there. Okay, right.
The cross module, cross module means a space with pi 1 and pi 2 non-trivial.
Exactly. So I it's basically for topologies. It's two group pi 1, pi 2. And what it is, there's a boundary map for pi 2 is a relative homotopy group to pi 1, A. So therefore, these two groups can be both non-abelian. It was the relative homotopy group.
Just as a reference, historical reference, Frank Quinn in 1991 discussed, I think, something more general than 1 and 3, which is just finite homotopy types.
But I think this one's earlier. Maybe that's a little bit more general. I think I know you also did a lot up here, so
no,
I don't know.
I mean,
but okay, that's just slash Quinn then, too.
Yeah.
So. And there's a general theory due to Porter, which is a homotopy N type. Okay, so but I'll just pick off four dimension. Okay. Any more comments? Well, this is basically I want to say that's almost all we know. In four dimension, are unitary. And I discard any isolated example. There are a few isolated which anybody has any comment, I'd be very interested in knowing, because I believe that's all.
How many of them is there a known simple continuum of Lagrangian?
So I wrote down a lattice model for this guy. So there's a Hamiltonian formulation of this one. This one, I think this is in the original paper, maybe, at least not twisted.
Not a quad lattice, I want a continuum. I think the continuum, if you take non-abelian G, generic cycle, there's no way to write down a continuum.
Oh, okay, my G is always finite, okay.
No, but
all
it's finite, but
it can be non-abelian,
yeah.
Okay, then I don't know the answer. I thought this one has. You wrote down some action,
yeah.
Right?
Not in general.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I wrote down Hamiltonian for this one, but I think the continuous limit, I have a guess related to BF theory, but I don't think it's known. Yeah, can be non-abelian. Well, pi 2 can be non-abelian too. My pi 2 is a relative one. Okay, then probably not is known. In general.
So you mean a certain example is it's a two group contraction or a different?
Well, it's a two group basically. There are two groups. They can be both. Okay, just to give you the definition.
So
it's a
little more general. So both can be non-abelian.
Both can be non-abelian because my pi 2 is a relative.
No, it's equivalent. It's a different viewpoint on the two groups.
It's a different, it's the slide, well, okay. It just, if you know homotopy, just this guy, okay. It's a relative space, that's what it is. So I just, since I said so much, I might as well just say what it is. So this is the boundary map from the relative homotopy to pi 1. And it's always true pi 1 acts on pi 2. And therefore you want this map to be equivalent with respect to this action, and this is conjugation. And you want this, action extend onto pi 2 by doing this math.
Well, there's a current, okay, then. And you
can reduce it to this. Well, that's but the thing is, it's just the definition is, this is equivalent if you make this action conjugation. And then there's also action, you can extend the action of a pi 2 onto pi 1 using boundary, is the conjugation. So that's how it is.
Okay, we use the kernel. The kernel is homomorphism?
Yeah.
The kernel is a Boolean.
Okay, so also follow the tradition of a mathematician, I will write down the theorem first. So the main theorem, which will be in my student thesis, is the following. So that's given a B, which is a unitary braided fusion category, and G is a finite abelian group, Oh, no, not abelian. Okay, doesn't matter. A finite group, not necessarily abelian. And then let B G cross be a G crossed braided. Okay, I think I need to put the word unitary here. If I don't put the word unitary, always unitary. Okay. Although I'm a mathematician, but I'm doing physics here, so everything's unitary. It just makes things much easier because you don't need to talk about spherical pivotal. Otherwise, that's very complicated.
But it's possibly this isn't redundant.
It could be, yeah. But I just protect myself as a mathematician. So let this be a. I want to show I can be a mathematician. I have a job. So it's a unitary G cross braided fusion category with a categorical G action. I will define both concepts. Okay. And then there exists a associated 3+1 2 cap T. So far it's nonsense because I can associate a trivial 2 cap T. It doesn't really matter. So I have to tell you how good they are. Moreover, so I'm saying that you can construct a 2 cap T, but now I want to show this 2 cap T is not a dumb one. Just take the trivial one. Okay. So the first case is if B is trivial, which is whack, and then we can add a 4 cocycle we will get a digraph written. So as a special case, we get digraph written. And if G is trivial, no. What?
Is there something like that, like a general construction or plural?
Okay, we'll be still sub 2 cap T, okay. But it's the double, right? It's double of written.
When you write,
oh.
You mean there are multiple 2 cap T's?
Not
even for a given.
I mean, for a given this data, basically given this guy. For each of this guy, there's a single T cap T. Oh, this is extra. So this constructor, there's no group cohomology in there. Just in order to construct digraph written, I need to modify the construction a little bit. That will recover the digraph written. A G cross? I have not explained G cross yet. I will.
Is this a field theory of oriented manifolds?
Yes.
And
no extension.
And do they have a G bundle or not?
They don't have a G bundle. It's basically the definition is RTR Siegel, what I give. This G here just used as input. I will say something about gauging, but.
So.
Well, okay, that's okay. I will finish this statement. So if G is
so what do you get if B is trivial?
B is trivial?
Okay, yeah.
If a B is trivial, whack, you can even throw in a 4 cocycle. And then you get digraph written. And if BG equals 0 for all G, and we get Kronecker-Yerta. And the third case, if you give a cross module, and then you can construct one of those things, and that will give you the Yetter homotopy two type. Okay, so I'm just saying all the what we know can be recovered by choosing special cases. The most interesting case, this is the case I'm really interested in, is what Pava talked about yesterday. So when I say G cross, I didn't use the word extension. So it can be non-faithfully graded, which means some component can be completely zero, which is the case for Crane-Yetter. And if you have a really a G cross graded extension, and then this also gives you something really interesting, and that's what I'm talking about. I think this related to what I'm going to talk about, if I have time, the lattice model and all this. These are the really interesting ones. Which,
so B, E is equal to B, yeah?
Yeah, B equals B. And then we also get some TKFT just by knowing this.
So is BG cross itself an example of a unitary braided fusion category?
It's not braided. It's a G cross braid. That's how we need to explain. So basically, as I said, you know, this is an attempt to construct more examples. So anything you define as a spherical two category, better include this one.
So this means that there is a G action on the category, and X tends to Y. If the X is degree G, the X tends to Y,
yeah,
is equal to G of Y tends
to X. Okay, I might just as well say what the power says. So in braiding, you have xy goes to yx, which means you have isomorphic from x tensor y to y tensor x. Now this category are not braided in general. We have a G cross braiding, and this has an index, which physically is the flux. And as you go cross, this flux will act on this guy, so this changes to by the action. So it does not go back to itself, it goes to something else. So therefore, it's relaxing a braiding, but it's not braiding. That's a very good question. I don't know the answer. So obviously, it would be as RTI, you know, one dimension down. I think it's even two, codimension two. And I suspect it will be fully extended because they are constructed by state sum, which I will show you. But I don't think that in general we know for sure that any state sum TKFT is fully extended all the way. Obvious to you, but not to mathematicians. The thing, if you know the answer, that means you answer my question because you know what to attach to a point. Now that would be a spherical two category.
Isn't it B itself if you would like to attach to a point?
Yeah.
In this case, it would be, yes. But I don't know, I don't even know the axiom. You know, a full extended TKFT is a nice thing, but I would call it just a characterization. It's something so complicated, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, just like you tell me.
So these one have a state sum formula.
There will be state sum. Yeah, everything will be state sum. That's why, as you know, there's no extension on it, just oriented manifold.
And is it homotopically determined?
I don't know that, but I wish not, but I think it will be.
And do you know what the four manifold invariants gives, at least in some cases?
It's not trivial because we already know Crane-Yetter. And the first interesting case, which my student spent like his computer, it just kind of finished the computation. So the first interesting case is it takes Fibonacci and it takes Fibonacci square. So physically you take two layers of a quantum Hall state and then there's a Z2 symmetry. And this symmetry can be gauged. And when you gauge, you get a beautiful theory. This one, actually, you may know the answer. When you gauge, you get SU2 level 8. But before you do the equalization orbit folding, you get a G cross one. So I just post a paper on the archive with my student. We list like 15 pages of symbols for this theory. And the whole purpose of this number is to compute the partition function. Just computer cannot finish. We need a quantum computer to get the answer.
So maybe two quick comments about the Crane-Yetter. One, yeah, is that is fully extended and you would attach to a point. So unitary.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Okay, great, okay.
The second thing is they discovered, I think, that their partition the invariant U attached to a four manifold is some number to the power or the characteristic times another number to the power signature.
No, that's only true for modular case, I think.
Oh, sorry.
But pre-modular is still, yeah, there's something more interesting. But I strongly suspect actually it's diagraph weighting kind of thing.
Yes, that's not my question, whether one and two are
equivalent. Not necessarily. I can tell you one thing I suspect. The Krenyata, as you know, just Dan said, if this is modular, and then the partition is extremely dumb, it's just all the characteristic and the signature. But suppose it's pre-modular, and then you cite a big theorem, like a corollary of a big theorem by Deligne, which is the center will be always a symmetric category. So therefore, it will be always a representation of a group with a choice of an order two element in the center. If the order two element choose to be trivial, that would be bosonic. And I suspect that's just diagraph weighting. But it's a fermionic. I think that's something interesting. Yeah, with the fermions, I think that's all the good stuff. As we see yesterday. They are the one we will see interesting structures. So I suspect if this the center is fermionic, then there might be something really interesting.
So is this a one including two?
Which one? Diagraph weighting?
Yeah.
Not quite. Without the omega, it is. But with the omega, no, it's not necessary. By the way, the one I really want to put on the list is the Donaldson-Samberger weighting theory. That's really would be. That's not unitary either, so that's why I insist unitary to be homotopy. So, but anyway, okay. So that's basically what I want to give. So this would be a state sum construction. Okay, so now we will start to explain this notion of actually. Power did a great job to do the expansion already, but I will do in a slightly different setting because I will do braided. He does not care about braiding, which is a much harder subject than braided. So now let me basically try to explain. It's kind of a really strange thing to do, and you can see why I think those are all still very trivial. This is basically a promotion of two-dimensional theory to three-dimension. So it's not terribly exciting.
So if you have this situation, then you can consider equivariantization.
Yeah? Yes.
And this will be
that would be the gauge step. So if you equivariantize this, that would be get a modular tensor category. That would be the gauge theory.
No, not modular because B was not
degenerate. Oh yeah, but I assume the case if B is modular.
Oh, then you will get modular.
Then you get
isn't
modular.
Isn't related to two for that category?
What?
Isn't your theory related to number two Krenyata for that modular bigger modular category?
Maybe, maybe not. I think it's. Might, but I don't
mean,
think so.
It seems that they should be related in some way. Because in general, if you do this equalization, you will get a braided category of the order of g bigger dimension.
It might be true, the partition function.
If you do this equalization for that category, wouldn't it be related to what you are talking about?
You know, I won't be surprised if the partition function R, but I don't think that the scalar space will be. Okay, so now let me explain the so-called G cross braided fusion category. So I start with a fusion category. So I will use the notation B. It's really supposed for braided, so. So first, this is a unitary braided fusion category. And then I want to put the structure on. So I want to put a G cross braided structure on. So these are two structures. Actually, I would probably use this notation. First, this is G braided. So as Paul explained, this means they have sectors. The only difference is my gradient is not faithful, which means some of the sector might be zero. Okay, so that's allowed. So not necessarily faithful. And then there's this tensor product have to have this property. And then there's an axis of G. In which you send any sector BG BH to BGHG inverse. Okay, so that is action. And then there's some axioms for this action. I won't really write. And then that's kind of G cross. And then braided means that you satisfied G braided, which does not mean it's braided. It means that if you have X and Y, and X has to be homogeneous, in the sense has to be has a well-defined sector, and then there's a map from this to YG and satisfies the generalization of the hexagon. There's only a few terms more. And that would be called G cross braiding. Okay, we call it heptagon. If you write down, there's one more term. It's written in a paper. If you really want to do physics, write down your symbols. There's a paper by me, my colleague, Professor Bonderson, Mason, Buckley, and Meng Cheng. So we wrote down the formula in terms of numbers. So that's G braided. And I'll give you an example.
Isn't that a full braid X by G?
No, it's a half braiding. Yeah. I'll give you a famous example, which is not braided, but it's G cross braided. So the example is the Tambara Yamagami theory. So it's a general construction. If you take any G, which is abelian and a finite, and you can construct a category called Tambara Yamagami, which is has all the object union one extra. It's called a near group. Okay, so it's a category with all the group elements, and then the fusion rule, the tensor product is gx, it just absorbed by x. And then x squared is the direct sum of all the elements in G. Okay, so that's the fusion rule. And it's commutative. And if you take G equals Z2, you recover Ising fusion rule. If you take G equals Z3, it's well known this is not braided. But you can see that actually has a G cross braiding. Okay, so that's a well known example. And in general, it's a theorem actually. It's almost never braided unless G is a two group. So this is the famous Tambara Yamagami coming from self-factor theories. Okay, so that's a G cross braided category. And now I want to.
So does the other crossing also act as G?
The other does not.
Okay, so the full braid will always.
Yeah, just by two.
You just decided which half.
Okay, so I should give you the physical intuition. So the point is that this X in here is a defect with flux G. So imagine this particle actually has a branch cut all the way inside the blackboard. So when doing braiding, when you cross the sheet, you will X about the flux. If you don't cross the sheet, you don't X.
Yeah, so you've like framed everything.
Yeah, you frame everything into the blackboard. In this example, it's Z2 braided. So this is the trivial one. This is the non-trivial one. It's a Z2 braided. And actually, this is a beautiful example. So I might just say a few words here. So if you take this Z3, if you cross what you're going to talk about, 1F, if it's a 1E, this is a fermion. And this describes exactly the top particle order of a 1/3 quantum Hall state. And then the three particle here, 0, 1, 2, these are particle hole. There's a Z2 symmetry, which is a particle hole symmetry. And now you can go through this procedure of gauging. The first step, you get this defect. And then you equivariantize it, which is orbital folding, and you will get SU2 level 4. Okay, so that's the gauging procedure.
Good question. So, you have, in the case when B is trivial, you can add a Fourier cycle.
Yes.
Right? Now, if you build an extension, then in the procedure that I described for this case,
I know what you
an obstruction O4, which is a Fourier cycle. And if it vanishes, then you can construct a braid across G category. But if it doesn't vanish, You cannot construct it, but perhaps you can still construct a TQFT, which would generalize one in full generality.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I know the question. I don't know the answer. My personal opinion is that's not the case. But I do know Lucas was not here. He talked about, you know, to construct a SPT. I think it's a different construction. I try really hard, I push my student really hard to incorporate that thing into this construction. It won't show partition functions invariance. My suspicion is if you do this construction, that will only work as a 5 plus 1 TQFT. It's just like you do turn some module tensor category. That's my personal suspicion. I know there's a way to make that into a digraph Witte, but it's a different construction.
But why does it work in this case? Is there a reason why trivial B it works and for non-trivial B it would not work?
It just, you know, as a physicist, your first thought is obviously it should work, but they just put in the either partition function, the packed move does not work out. It might be just some phases, and that would explain why. So, but I just don't know the answer. Yeah, Max. Okay, so I will come back to this question. Okay.
Should I think that this table of some dimensional TQFTs as being SPT phases for G or gauge theories for G?
Okay, I would say that's actually exactly related to this question. I would say no.
So the SPT phases for G?
I would say, you know, for example, okay. Can we postpone this question just for a few
sure.
minutes? Because when I explain this, it will come out. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I explained this G cross thing. And now, you know, I think actually 2 years ago, I gave a talk here, exactly talk about this gauging business. That's for two dimension. So I will just quickly, because there's a big paper on the archive, if you're interested, it's not what I interest today. So, so the thing, lots of people interested is to study defects. So let me talk of the case which we have a physical picture. So let's make B to be a unitary modular tensor category, okay? And then I can bring in the whole intuition of anion, okay? So this is an anion model. And now you can ask the question of when a group G is a symmetry of this theory, okay? And then you can ask the next question, if this is a symmetry, can I gauge it? Okay, and when you gauge, what did you get? So I will give you the answer to this question. Although this is kind of a digression because I use this as really a strange thing. I use this as an input for something else, but there's a story here too. Okay, so the answer is the following.
This is in 2+1 dimension?
This is for 2+1 dimension.
Oh, 2+1.
This is 2+1. You can see why this kind of irony, you know, I want to do 3, but I start with a 2. Okay, so this is purely 2-dimension. And then your first question asks, what is the symmetry of the group of the modular category? That's actually a subtle question. So what you're really supposed to do is you're supposed to write out Hamiltonian in 2-dimension, realize this theory, and then you should have a G, each G give a unitary transformation, commute with the Hamiltonian. But we are talking about topological, so therefore, we only care about this symmetry commute with a Hamiltonian in low energy. So that's actually make things easier, but still, in low energy, not only it acts on the ground state, it also acts on the excitation, okay? So therefore, the symmetry at least will preserve some properties here. So therefore, the first step you define is the following. So this is basically a redo of Powers lecture in this setup. So the analogy is the following. Wow. But it's okay. So the analogy is the following. So you define this auto braided. So this is the group. This is really the group of symmetry of B. So this is all tensor braided tensor auto equivalence classes. Okay, so you take a so-called monoidal functor back to itself, preserve the categorical structure, and you forget, you make isomorphic classes to make this into a real group. And if you don't make it into a group, there's this natural isomorphic between them, and then you put a bar in there, that's the two-group promotion, okay? So that's the notation. So it just, we start with a group, and then we promote by the underlying bar, and then we demote put the upper bar. I will do that. And then there's another interesting group, which is the Picard group, okay? So this is the group of all invertible module categories. But really, they are bimodule categories. Because my B is braided, I can turn a left module into right by using the braiding. So they are really bimodules. And then they live inside broad Picard of B, which Pava defined yesterday. It's a subgroup. And this one actually is even better. You can promote twice, okay? You can promote this into a three group, okay? And then the fundamental theorem, actually Pava didn't mention, that's their beautiful theorem, is that we all know there's a relation between symmetry and the defect. And there's a mathematical theorem setting this setup is perfect. So the theorem is that there's an isomorphism between auto braided tensor equivalence with a bar as a categorical group isomorphic to Picard. Okay. And this is the precise mathematical statement, defects corresponding to symmetry. Okay. There's a symmetry defect correspondence, one-one correspondence. And there's a slight unfortunate thing about this isomorphism, which is the construction only one direction is canonical. Okay. The other direction is not. So there's a canonical map from here to here. Which is basically my boundary map. Okay, this form a cross module if you know the language. And this is actually basically the pi 2. Okay, there's a boundary map. And I can show you this map. It's just one picture. That's why, you know, it's beautiful to have this anion picture. So what is this map? The map says we can turn a defect into a symmetry. And here's the picture. So suppose you have a topological face in two dimension, and you have a defect line, and it turns out to be invertible, okay? And what you can do is you imagine you have the anion, which is small defects here, and then you can start to say, okay, I can push this thing, and simultaneously push the defect line. As I push, this goes to here. But this defect line is invertible, so I can recouple. I think it is, but I just have a hard time to understand how to connect the two languages.
Okay, this picture.
Okay, this picture, I don't know you have this picture too.
Definition.
Oh, that's your definition, okay. This is 1+1 dimension, that's true. But I think probably the picture works in general. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so this gives you the action. Okay, that says, you know, that says defect line gives you symmetry. So that's the map, which I call pi 2, of the boundary map. Okay, that's the cross module actually. This actually is a theorem, this is a cross module. So that's give you, unfortunately, this directory does not exist. Okay, well, there is a one, but it's not canonical, which is a big deal in this subject. Okay, so that's this the key mathematical theorem I'm using. And now I want to define a few things.
What form symmetries are gonna act by like natural transformations of the identity?
Oh, narrow identity coming here as coefficient of something. It will come up, it just level higher. Okay, so here I will give some definition now. First, if you're given B and the G, a global symmetry, it's just a row from G to this auto tensor braided equivalence. Okay, so I call it global symmetry. And the second thing is row can be, row is a categorical symmetry if row can be lifted to row bar from G bar to auto tensor graded B bar. Okay. So I claim this is not truly a good thing to at this level. And this only tells you you preserve all the global topological properties like fusion or something. And there's a very important thing, which is this supposed to be a physical theory that's microscopic degree freedom. And that's like have some kind of interplay between the global and the local symmetry. And that's encoded this interplay. So that really is a symmetry.
Would it be stronger class for a G bar bar to?
Yes, the next step. So the next step is rho can be gauged if rho bar can be lifted to rho bar bar. And you should notice this guy has no lifting to, you have to use the isomorphism to do this lifting. And that's where you can gauge. I think that's, yeah, okay. I think that's relative, yeah. I'm hiding something here. Each of these steps has obstruction, okay? And the obstruction here is O3 rho inside H of 3G invertible elements of a B, okay? So that's the first obstruction. And there's an action G on here too, okay? And it's this second obstruction in mathematics, we are very careful to distinguish between high order obstruction or secondary. This second obstruction is a secondary, which means that this obstruction depends on a choice to be made here. Okay? So when this vanished, and then the possible lifting is parameterized is as a Z2, as a H harper 2G in what will be torsor. Okay? And then you need to choose one that's give you a particular lifting. And I call that alpha. So that's parameterized all the lifting if you choose a base point. And then this O4 rho alpha is inside H upper 4G U1. Okay, so it's a secondary obstruction because it depends on your choice. Okay, and just a second, if this vanished, and then the possible lifting here is parameterized by beta if you choose a base point. And that's giving you the unique way of gauging. Also, if both obstruction vanish, then gauging depends on these two things, alpha, beta. Okay. Single bar. It's the following thing. If you think about toric code, actually it's very misleading. In the following sense, toric code Hamiltonian is designed so beautifully, there's no local degree freedom left in this thing. And most Hamiltonian, when you write down a topological phase, the ground state would be a topological part tensor, a local part. And when we act on the symmetry, you're supposed to act on the topological part, but it's a symmetry of the Hamiltonian, so it's act on the whole thing. And then there's a projective phase between how you split topological and the local, and that's encode the consistency of how to split local and topological. So that's the first part. And the second bar is just gauging.
So this means a unitary fusion, braided fusion category?
A unitary modular category in this discussion.
So the nuclear center is trivial.
It's trivial. And then one more comment. So because this is the subject I really love for the last 2 years, which is gauging. So and then what you do is the following. So if it's two step, if you have this obstruction vanish, those two things, alpha, beta, give you a G cross braided extension. Actually, give you a G cross extension. And then miraculously, the G cross braiding come for free. Okay. So it just get extension, then the braiding come for free. And then the next step, which is equivariantization, which is called orbit folding, that's also come for free. That's unique. And that's the gauging. So therefore, when you gauge, you go from a unitary modular category go to another unitary modular tensor category, and that's a topological phase transition. At this step, the G cross, the flux actually is confined most of the time. So So they are not really quasi-particles. They are really extrinsic things, which means that you start with the Hamiltonian of your theory. Now you have to add a term to force the defects into your theory. They are normally confined. And so therefore, they are non-modular tensor category.
But at which stage can you still gauge in one more dimension?
You know, that's actually, I really don't know why. You know, there's some, I really don't know how to answer that question, you know. For one reason, I'm a low-dimensional topology. So that's as high as I can go. So I think that the theory should be has a, you know, general discussion. But the problem is just like, you know, sometimes this group just naturally lose, you know, bar. It cannot promote it anymore. Sorry?
When you do the overfolding, is there or isn't there a twisted
sector? Oh, yeah. I will give you an example, actually. You know, I know them by heart. I know them very well because that's actually, I started with the whole thing started with a discussion actually here several years ago. Somebody asked me how to gauge the three fermion with an S3 symmetry. So so let me just quickly run an example. Okay, I will run two examples probably just quickly because this is a really a beautiful story. So example, the famous one with story code. And we have one EM epsilon or psi. So this is the, I think a Fiona called Eisen symmetry. So this is the Z2 symmetry, you permute them. And the first step of gauging, like the obstruction or one in this case. So we call this one B. And the first step, so GZ2. And the first step is, this is toric code plus the twist sector has two of them. And they're both quantum dimension square root 2. And the fusion rule is that if you fuse this together, I think you get 1 plus psi. And then you square, probably get E plus M. And then this fusion rule. Okay, so that's the twist sector.
So how many objects do you have?
Oh, I have 6. I have 4 anions plus 2 defects. This is not good. This is the middle step. And then the second step is, because this is confined right now. Okay. Now you deconfine them, which means you orbifolding. And what you get is Ising cross Ising bar or SU2 level 2 cross SU2 level 2 bar. So you get 9 anions. With a quantum dimension 1, 1, 1, 2, square root 2.
What are the spin here?
The spin, this will be, you know, just like 1/16, those kind of things. You just, you know, you do this.
There's a
non-anion
here. So
is it 1/16 or 3/16? This one's 3/16. The thing is, the first H upper 2 vanish because of the action. And then these two theory distinguished by H upper 3. Z2 with the U1 coefficient. That's Z2. That's give you the two theory. That's H upper 3 is a Frobenius-Schrödinger indicator. That's distinguished Ising with SU2 level 2. That's the 1/16 versus 3/16.
So this is the second step. Step is your, what is second? You know, gauging is
the. Well, the whole step I call gauging because yeah. You need to add, first, you need to add the twist sector. Yeah, well, there's a procedure for you to do this either way. This is the big word I have a hard time to learn. This direction is called equivariantization, and this is called de-equivariantization. But I will just say condensing and orbifolding.
So the first step
is coupling to the ground. Yeah, the first one is stationary gauge field. It just puts them in as background.
Yes, background. Yes.
And then this, you just deconfine them. Yeah, you have to add them in. This step took me the longer time to understand what is going on. Why do I need to do this? And basically, the step is you take orbits of this action, and then you take stabilizer, you take a reducible projective representation of the stabilizer with a fixed H upper 2. And that's how you get it.
But at the last, you do get a modular.
You get a modular. So that's a theorem. If you start with this modular, that would be modular. Actually, this one's also modular in a different sense. There's extended ST matrix. The S, extended S is non-invertible. I will do one more theorem I cannot resist because that's the whole starting point of my. Yeah, this one, it's a Trent-Simon theory of S16 level one. It's a Z2-gate theory, but if you want the boundary, there is a realization use SO16 level one. We have central chart 8. Let's realize this as a modular category.
SO16 level one, how many parameters does it
have? Oh, it should be. I don't know, but it should be exactly this with central chart 8. And for a modular category, the central chart is only defined mod 8, so that's simply at 0.
Okay, so, but if I describe that as U1 times U1.
This one.
The top one,
yeah.
And then, what do I do to find the other one? Do I just turn one of the ones into?
You mean the other, this one?
I want to get to the bottom.
Yeah, you want this one or this one? Oh, okay. So if you want to get this one, so let me see if I can give you the good answer. So this is related to the famous transition between superconductors, the weak coupling. So in the P plus IP superconductors, if the electron pairing is weak, it's Ising, it's Fafian. And if the pairing is strong, it's the toric code. And that's exactly that phase transition. So you can describe this gauging by take two layers of a P wave superconductors, one up, one down. And then you look at them pair up and look at Majorana, and you will get exactly this guy. So that's a physical way to see this particular one. Okay, I will skip my favorite SO just quickly mention. So my favorite example is SO8 level one with the S3 symmetry. And when you get this one, you get a humongous category. I hope that student finished his job to construct this theory with Trent-Simon theory. This have the, you know, this is SO8 level one, had this S3 symmetry, so it's a beautiful.
Is this a three fermion?
This is a three fermion. Has the first non-abelian symmetry. Yeah. I think you get a theory with rank 12. There are two choices. They have the same S, they have same T matrix, but different S matrix. Okay, so I think probably I will spend 5 minutes to write down the state sum for this, and then the guy will be.
You know,
you
can take.
Okay, I will do a little bit more then. Okay, I will stop at the. I think it's a long day, so feel exhausted. Anyway, okay, so.
Your choice of twisting here happened in the step where you made your gauge field dynamical.
Yeah.
Why don't you have two choices already?
No. Sorry. The choice already made before you orbit folding.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just the orbit folding step is for free and it's unique.
I see.
Yeah. That
you
seems.
Just get the same category.
Yeah, well, it just, you know, spun down here is unique, and they go back and forth. Actually, the theorem due to this guy is there's a two-functor equivalence. There's a two equivalent between those two things, G cross extension, and it just says equivalentization, de-equivalentization is a two-functor equivalent.
So how if somebody just needs the second one, how do you know?
I can easily get this one. I think there's a psi.
Right.
You condense this one.
So here was a billion, but it was non
abelian. Oh, you want to say, suppose non abelian?
Yes.
Well, that's also, you have some kind of Frobenius algebra. And once you have this algebra, and then what you do is just take so called a module category over this algebra. That's de-equivalentizing. It's all internal. And then you realize some of them are deconfined because of the braiding. So you throw them away. And you get back to this one. So basically, it's a one-one correspondence between an NER theory with a symmetry and the gauged one which is a modular category with a subcategory, which is a representation G. What do you mean? Just take this one. Rep S3 is inside there. That's abelianize your theory, okay? Because the representation 3 is a symmetric tensor category. When you condense, you get back to this one. So this is inside, it's a rank 12, I believe. And then when you condense this one, you get back to the 3 fermion theory. It's not simple current. Yeah, the dimension is 1, 1, 2. There's a bosonic object. It's not abelian, but you can still, the theory is so flexible. You just take any algebra, you study their modules. Well, you know, this is completely, if I give you a quantum computer, everything is computable because all you do is solve pentagons. Mixed pentagons, because what do you do? You start with this algebra, and you look at the category you are start with, you want to condense, and you take linear combination of them, and then you start acting on them as module, just solve all the module structures, and that's give you what is well-being here. And then you look at the braiding to throw it away confined, and you will get back to this thing. It's much easier than this step, actually. Actually, I played this game at the very beginning. I'm very good at starting here to guess what it is. And then we check by just condensing. But this is a theorem, the 1-1 correspondence.
Does the bar mean that it should be opposite orientation or not?
The bar means complex conjugation.
So it
has opposite orientation. Yeah, so it really. I don't like the wording of negative 2 for the following reason. The level has a shift. If you write a root of unity, it's e 2 pi I k plus 2. What complex conjugate does is put a bar here, and it does not put a negative sign there. Yeah, it's shifted by, you know, with the dual custom. Yeah. Yeah, but basically in quantum group language. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's okay. If that's the way you say this is SU2 level negative 2, but what I really mean is you take complex conjugate of everything in your data. That physically just means that if you fractal quantum hold this way, you put a magnetic field the other way. And the general theorem is that you start with a double. When you gate, you also get a double. So that's why it's always come over the double, because the toric code is a double. And the central charge won't change. And the total quantum dimension just multiplied by the group element squared. So this one has 4, this one should have, I don't know, 4 times 16 maybe? Yeah, 16, I think. So there are some general properties you can deduce. Here, there's nothing really. It's just this Z2 symmetry is non-trivial. So, and this the difference between these two is inside the H harper 3. So the inside H harper 3, the symmetry group with U1. This is a Z2, and this 3 co-cycle twisted the associativity F symbols. And it turns out this F symbol, the -1 is intrinsic. It's a Frobenius-Schwarz indicator. And that's the distinguish between those two theories. So Ising at SU2 level 2, they have all 1 sigma psi. And the speed is E2 pi I over 16, E2 pi I, 16 times 3. But more importantly, this one is real, and this one is pseudo-real. So which means the Frobenius-Schwarz indicator of this one is 1, this one is -1, and that's exactly this H harper 3 captured. which is some suggestive symbol has a minus one in front of it. And normally the suggestive symbol can be changed by gauge, but this minus one is intrinsic. So that's the difference of the two.
So in the beginning of the talk, you say if a B is a gradient diffusion, not modular,
yeah,
you can do the similar
thing. Yeah, I don't know what you will get. I don't know what you will get. You get a theory. I just have no idea.
But what you get, that's still a...
The procedure just go through. Yeah, just go through.
Pre-module theory or something more than pre-module. There's a gradient diffusion category.
Probably it's a gradient diffusion. I don't even know the answer. I think you just get something. I just have no idea. The thing is, you know, one thing I learned from physics, once you have a picture, everything becomes much easier. So I can think through everything here by using anionic thing. And if once it's premodular, I lose all the intuition. I don't know what happened. Okay, so I think finally let me tell you the state sum, and then really I'll just say a few words about, you know, I don't know much. Actually, I spent last night prepared the Hamiltonian. I'm still puzzled by what to do. Okay, so finally let me give you the state sum. So this will be a state sum construction. So I have this BG crossed.
So B is a modular or premodular?
B is only premodular.
I see. So that's your
first starting point. And my gradient is not even have to be faithful. So it's much more general than the anion theory, the gauging theory. It just I learned a lot from gauging theory. So I use this as an input. And I use this to construct. I just want to read the main point. I think this whole thing is probably relatively trivial. But I think the main point is that we are far from have a well good definition of a spherical two category. I think four dimension is much harder than we thought. It's just very interesting. Okay, so I will get a state sum 3 plus 1 t cap t. And it's automatically like the RTR type t cap t, but I strongly suspect it's also free extended, but I really don't know the definition. Okay, so here what you do. I will give you the partition function. So I take a four manifold, which is oriented. And I will take a triangulation. A real triangulation, combinatorial, which means I break into simplices. And I will let Ti be the I skeleton. And I do something I really hate to do, but I have no choice. I will order all vertices. It's a terrible thing to do, but it seems I have no choice. And then what I will do is I will choose, let me now call this one C or A. No, I think C is better. This is a representative set of isomorphic classes of simples. Now there's a subtle difference, which is very important. A representative set and the set of isomorphic classes slightly different, you know. This is basically the difference between a topological charge and an anion. I really choose anion. I think branching would be fine, but I just, to be lazy, just order them all. I think if you do fermion theory, you should do just branching. It's a local structure, yeah. Okay, so and then I will label all edges by group elements. I will label all triangles by objects in irreducible C. I will label all tetrahedrons by objects C. Okay, so that's what I'm going to label. So, what? Oh, you need the same thing as here. The line is the tetrahedron is also labeled by objects in here, which a terrible thing to do. I will tell why. And then I will write down this sum. So I call this a coloring. Oh, it's just, you know.
Under the
symmetry? No. Simple object. It just takes the anions.
Yeah, so in this example.
Well, it's hard to see what I write down, what I mean. Do I mean a representative? Do I mean this is an isomorphic class? And in this set, you. Well, it just means that if you take a category, if two things, you know, if the Hom space is one dimensional, that means you identify them. And that's the four classes of simple objects. But that's different from inside each class, I choose one.
Yeah. No. But what is the class? In this example, that's EM is one class.
No. This is one class. This is one.
Yeah.
The super selection sectors, if you want. It's just the difference is important in the following sense. When you say I take a representative guy, so that means it's an anion, but it means you can have local things attached to it.
Oh, I see.
And that will make things well defined. If you take an isomorphic class, and then this isomorphic self is the important information, you are losing that. And that's caused trouble for you to define mathematically. Okay, so then I will write down the state sum. So the partition function of X with BG cross will be a sum over all colorings. And then with your product over vertices by doing D square over G, where D square is the quantum dimension square.
Over order of G. What does it mean over G?
Oh, sorry. Which one?
D squared over G. G is a group?
Oh. The order of the group, thanks. I was thinking, what's the order? And then of edges, D squared minus 1. And faces the dimension and tetrahedron dt inverse. At this point, it's all you can imagine. It's all go through the strata. Each thing you attach something, you just take its dimension. Okay, and you attach a vertex, it's equivalent, so you divide it by the order. And the edge is attached a group element. Actually, what this means is a dimension of that defect sector. So that's what it is. Yes, but what it really means is it's labeled by CG. So in the Langevin model, so what really you label? You label vertex by the unitary fusion category, and you label the edge by the unitary fusion category. It's the unit fusion category, but you treat it differently. It's a bi-module. That's the interpretation of the edge. And here, the same thing. You label vertices by category, and you label this by G. What it really means is the bi-module CG. And the dimension of this bi-module, that's exactly this guy.
When you take product over H, you take product of the same number?
Oh, for each coloring.
Product over H, D squared. This is just the.
Well, that means each edge, you need to have I just write a fancy way. Okay, so let me write this. So this term can be replaced by D squared over G raised to the power of all the vertices.
That term
is replaced by D squared to the negative of all the edges.
Regardless
of how they label. The reason I say it this way is I tell you the deficiency of this construction. In principle, they should be all labeled differently.
So this theory doesn't use anything.
I'm not finished yet. That's the most important thing, not there yet. You see, I only go through tetrahedron. There's one more thing. I have the four symplices. That's the 15 GS symbol with a plus minus. That's the whole thing, which is highlighted in here. There we go. So the thing is, the whole point is this guy, the 15 GS symbol, okay? So what it is, it's hard to imagine, but that's actually my specialty. I'm a four-dimensional topologist. So this is a four simplex, okay? So the way to think about four simplex is you label the vertices as 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Do I? Okay. And then you count it. There are five faces, five tetrahedron. There are 10 edges. And you just count. And that's the combinatorics to represent them. And what I need to do is I need to flat this onto the plane so that I can get a number. And you have to be really careful to flat onto the plane so that when you get a number, this is invariant and then pack moves. Okay, so that's what you need to do. This is the abstract combinatorics. And then how I flat, this is a spin network, which I will do. And then if you look at my labels, all the edges are labeled. And the one I don't label, this is the tetrahedron. And what I do is I break this tetrahedron into this guy, and I have a label in the middle edge. And that gives you a number. I have some normalization of 6 symbols, that's all. So let me just say one thing, or two things quickly. So you can see the deficiency of this thing. First, all the vertices, all the edges are labeled by the same thing. There's nothing interesting, you know, all those. Secondly, I'm doing something terrible by thinking about a 3+1 theory as a 2+1 theory. But this one really should be intrinsic. And I break this into a two-dimensional one. Okay, that's the biggest problem. It's really make this into a two-dimensional theory. Okay, so that's what I don't like, but I have no choice. So what it really means is, if you think about a packed move, as the definition of the algebraic structure of a spherical two category, and from 1 to 2, there's a jump of complexity. 1+1 TF is easy. If you look at a packed move, there's only one move really. And if you look at 0+1 is easy. And then 1+1 is relatively, there's a new thing. That's why we go from nothing vector space to Frobenius algebra, because the 2-2 move. And then 2 to 3 is easy. There's nothing new. You just take a cone on the 2+1. The 1+1, you get 2+1. If you go from 2+1 to 3+1, there's one new move, which is 3-3. And that's, you need something new algebra. And this break, it just says, I didn't use any new algebra. I just used the other two. So it's just a cone on one dimension lower. OK, so that's why I think they are relatively simple. One more quick comment is, if you want to write out a Hamiltonian, now you have terms for each vertex edge and the faces. You will get a membrane of defect things. And I really have nothing to say because it's so hard. Nothing can be computed. I think I will stop here. Thanks for listening.
Something like
Ugarit's model? Oh, that's Gather Kunyata. That's the one I know very well.
Okay, cool.
If G is trivial, and then B is premodular, and the TKF is Kunyata, and then the model I wrote down with Kevin Walker exactly covers this case.
Mm-hmm. I think it's obvious that we can modify this whole construction using a Fokker cycle on G with various
humans. Yeah, that's what it is. It's somewhere here. But the trouble is how to prove its invariance. I think physicists would see obvious that's where it goes.
How do you prove invariance of this?
It's very complicated. So what you do is you take all this 1, 5, 2, 4, 4, 2, 3, 3, and you draw a diagram, and then you use the property of this graphic calculus. You see all the pentagon, heptagon exactly implies all the invariants. So it's just a very patient, careful check that it's all invariants. That's why it's a thesis.
Can I double check? So if the category that you start with before you add G is modular, would this correspond to something that?
Yeah, that's the one question of what I did with Calvin.
Right, so it's a surface.
Yeah, it's a surface thing.
Even with the G symmetry, that doesn't change.
With the G symmetry, you throw in diagram for Witten without cocycle. So you can take a modular category, take a group X on this, and then you build a G cross category by throw the whole thing in the zero sector. Everything else is zero. And then what you are doing is you put digraph weighting onto this Korean EI that you
get. So you get an interesting surface.
You get similar with the digraph weighting.
But also some kind of
Yeah, in the bulk, but digraph weighting. That's why I think it's a different construction when the other full cocycle comes up. But digraph weighting is everywhere. You can recover.
Well, you must use group
elements. Well, the real interpretation of group elements is not a group element. It's the whole flux G sector, actually. So it's really the defect line, the whole defect line. That's a defect line, actually.
So can you replace it to representation of G?
I think you, I don't know. I think if it's replaced by representation of G, you are literally doing the gauge theory. So I think it just goes back to the old story. It's just your gauging thing. Because that, the next step is the good representation just you basically abelianize the whole story. So take conjugacy classes and do this. So I don't know the answer, but I suspect it just gauge it.
Any more questions? Okay.